Welcome to High School History Recap. Today I bring you the second part of my interview with Ayanda Nenemba. Ayanda founded the Ilebo Village community. And Ayanda's aim is to, and this is the aim I appreciate very much, is to get South Africans to converse, to talk about history, to talk about issues of race, to talk about this nation of ours and how we can build it. I hope you enjoy this conversation, but I also, through this, I also want to extend an invitation. If you've got something to add to this conversation, if you want to join this initiative, please let us know at highschoolhistoryrecap@gmail.com.
May God bless South Africa, our land, our heritage. May God grant us the wisdom to steward, preserve, increase, and multiply our nation, to administer justice and righteousness in all our affairs, for our sake, our children, and their children's children.
So this is the day that we've all been waiting for. Ilebo Village Community Cast is where you're joining us. Mahlali hashtag, that is where you find us. Hashtag Mahlali on all social media platforms. We are Ilebo Village Community Cast. 073-346-7614 on the WhatsApp line. And this is the part two that we have all been waiting for. Joining us in studio is our favorite history teacher, William H. Polk, who's joining us, the founder, producer, and presenter of the High School History Recap. Where do we find the podcast again?
Just Google High School History Recap, Twitter at William H. Polk.
And pop, it comes up. And so do join some of those conversations, great historical accounts and lessons that are posted on the podcast. Today, we want to summarize and conclude our conversation from part one, where we were looking at the history of South Africa and having a conversation around race relations, having a conversation around some of the differences that we see in various sectors of our society. William, we spoke a lot about where we come from, some of the causes and some of the, you know, unsaid scientific facts around, our historical account. If we had to now look forward, looking, first of all, just to let you know, Mahlali, you know, our team here is made up of very young people. So William and I are probably the oldest in the set right now. And so we had an interesting conversation around how young people view, you and I are having this exciting conversation because we can relate, you know, we come from the same generation, but there's young people who look at it and think, we have a different view, you know. It then brings us to wonder, how do we form a national unity, a national identity?
I think that is the big challenge. Obviously the opposite of unity is polarization. And if we're going to pay attention to polarizing voices in society, then obviously we'll never get to that point. Maybe we need to talk about this concept of nationalism. And last time we mentioned 1912, but South Africa became a united country really in 1910. And the reason why the South African Native National Congress was formed, John Dube and you know, the people like Saul Plaatje and so on, why they formed the ANC was because the rights of Black South Africans were denied. It's interesting, the Cape Colony had what was called the Cape Franchise. They actually had a representative government. But that franchise wasn't brought into the Union of South Africa.
So when you say that South Africa found its unity, who are we talking about exactly?
We're talking, remember, we spoke about the Cape Colony, Natal, the Orange Free State, and the Transvaal became a united country. And it was really like a British colony until 1910. when it became the Union of South Africa, and obviously later on then it became the Republic of South Africa.
So then within the Union of South Africa, that is where black segregation was actually legislated.
Yes, okay. they were denied a voice.
Sure.
So democracy was limited to
certain groupings.
To white people, really.
Yeah.
So. And the Cape franchise, you know, they continued, but after the National Party came to power in 1948, they removed, through legislation, they removed the Cape franchise.
And so if you talk about the concept of nationalism, what exactly is that?
Okay, so this idea of a nation is really the idea that people take ownership of their country.
Mm.
And you give them a say in government. So how do you expect people to take ownership of a country and do their part, you know, in their country if they are denied a voice?
Mm.
Because there's something like a social contract.
Mm.
And that is, we elect our leaders to act, you know, in our best interest.
Sure.
Making sure that we have certain rights.
Mm.
But unfortunately, with the creation of the Union of South Africa, black people were excluded.
Mm.
And I mean, that remained the case really until our first democratic elections in 1994.
So if you and I, you know, and our wonderful young people here had to come together and form a committee, William, to say that, look, we really want to, we want to find solutions going forward. Mm. There's a concept that I feel is not spoken about enough. Ne? Mm. In trying to find solutions, what has then happened, and I think it's a very organic thing that happens, what has then happened is that there's a very subtle underlying reverse racism that is sort of creeping in, i.e. in trying to stand up for myself, you know, the line between standing up for myself and actually seeing you with a prejudicial eye because you're a white guy, you know, you're white and you're male. I mean, that's already... That's already two big points.
Not the best brand.
Are you hearing what I'm saying? So it's very easy for me. The line is very thin between standing up for myself as a black woman and also now using the power that I have as a black woman to shut you down.
Mm. It is. And don't you think it's really telling of the time now is... if you look at the political climate, the global political climate, there is this tendency to try and like you said, maybe reverse the discrimination that has happened in the past.
How do we stop that? For me, I think it's one of the most if we don't nip it right now, ne, where it is oozing its life, it's going to be a problem because if we are already recognizing that this thing is coming up, you know, how do we nip it? How do we make sure that in us trying to find a stable ground to stand on, the balance that we all want, we are not then... Let me give an example about affirmative action. I remember I was in HR a couple of years ago. Hey, and I saw this thing and I'm like, hey, I'm too Christian, man, to understand this thing, you know, because... And when I say I'm too Christian, I know it may irritate somebody out there, but the concept that I'm trying to talk about is the issue of real equality. In as much as, with all my heart, William, I believe that the core of white South Africa needs to portray a degree of remorse so that some of the ways in which we try and redress the injustices of the past is not legislated. Because affirmative action is a legislation of trying to say, guys, open up your industries, open up your companies. But in practice, it is prejudice for me on another level. It's exactly the same thing that makes me not look at you as a capable human being because now you're a white male. Mm. And so you're not employable. And it's deeply problematic for me.
If you say remorse, do you think there's been enough of that shown
no.
in South Africa?
I think there's absolutely zero. I think there's absolutely zero. And the reason why I think there's absolutely zero is because a lot of the action that redresses the injustices of the past are legislated. Mm. If it wasn't because of legislation, a lot of these things would not be
So it's not forced down people's throats. It's like,
yes. If for example, William, it's a you're a difficult person to have this conversation with, you know, because you are balanced, you know. But for somebody else, a domestic worker is a thing. It's an item. It's you know, a thing on the wall. And, you know, I know that this sort of thing happens even between ethnic groups, but specifically for the sake of this conversation, between white and black groupings, I with all my heart, I believe that that remorse, it's not natural. Mm. It has not come forth. It was legislated that these injustices be redressed. And that's why we see some kind of action and movement. I've not seen anything voluntary. And I'm talking about in the corporate sense.
So, but do you think that legislation might have hampered voluntary
I think so.
Remorse or
it's a very I don't know if hampered is the right word. I do think that legislating things like affirmative action, for example, was prematurely looking, you know, for that remorse. Because you see, the thing is, what we coming back to the whole issue of will and being human. It doesn't matter how much you've wronged me. Let me just reverse it. It doesn't matter how much I've wronged you. You cannot expect me to say sorry until I feel like, oh, I understand I've wronged you.
Yeah.
And all of that requires time.
It does. I think you're very right when you say time. I think we're still healing.
Yeah.
And maybe that's another aspect we should focus on.
I think so,
is
too.
Is how people are healing.
I think so, too.
And again, I'm just taking my own life. And, you know, I got married 2 years ago to a woman who adopted a black child.
Yeah.
So I'm the father of a black
beautiful
child.
Daughter. Beautiful daughter.
And I must say, obviously there are those that would frown on this and say, they might. And I'm telling you, it's from both sides.
Yeah.
You get people that frown on this from, you know, from the white community, from the black community. But I think there are many such stories of people
that come together
willingly
agreed.
Healing, and we don't focus enough on that.
I absolutely, William, 100% agree. And that's why, for me, I want us to talk about the issue of reverse racism, because what that does is that it empowers the black person in South Africa to go and do exactly as was done to them.
Yeah.
And even though, like I said, I mean, I'm going to keep emphasizing it because I think it's an incredibly important part of our healing process, that when parties come together, there must be an acknowledgement of hurt, there must be an acknowledgement of wrongdoing, and there must be, if restitution is necessary, then there must be a willingness for that restitution to happen, you know? So whilst I believe that that process is necessary, I also believe that it is also very necessary for this kind of social education to emphasize that going forward, it's not going to help for anyone who's been disadvantaged to go and do exactly as was done. It's not going to help.
Because how will people feel remorse or, you know, if they are then themselves feeling wronged? You know, that whole idea of reverse racism or discrimination, if you want. But you mentioned social education and actually education.
Yeah.
And I think we really have the best example of that in South Africa in the person of Madiba. He's the one that said the key to this is education.
Yeah.
It's raising awareness.
Yeah.
And what you're doing through this... And I like the fact that it's a you know, a village community.
It is a village community. The rural in me will not shut up, exactly. Even in the city.
It takes a village to raise a child,
so, definitely.
And we need to raise them with new values.
Yeah.
Not values or you know, of polarization.
Yeah.
Driving wedges between them. And I think that's unfortunately one of the downsides of affirmative action, is this wedge.
Yeah.
It's driving in between the groupings in South Africa.
Yeah. And I mean, like you say, it's really unfortunate. It's so deeply unfortunate, because instead of providing the solution that would probably work, it has gone and forced people into a position that they are extremely uncomfortable about, and that's where the anger comes in. I mean, I don't know if you've watched The Roads, you know?
Mm.
For me, for The Roads and how we drive and what we do on the roads is such a strong a picture of where we are at as a country.
And to add to that, you've got the people driving in the cars, but you've got so many walking to work, you know, relying on public transportation.
Absolutely.
That inequality, but also that anger.
Yeah.
And those are definitely things that we need to focus on in South Africa.
William, it has been amazing having this conversation with you. I don't know how to thank you. I do hope that we can have follow-up conversations.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, because when we do get those comments, we want to be able to respond, and because we've triggered a lot of things. I mean, we've spoken about a lot of uncomfortable things. But thank you for being open to have the conversation. Thank you for being such an incredible teacher. And all the best with the podcast.
Thank you.
We would like to be invited to the podcast.
No. I was going to suggest that I need to invite you to tell your story.
You know, and maybe just to ask more questions, because that's probably what I'm going to do best. But thank you so much.
No, you know what? Let's continue to
engage,
to believe in conversation.
Absolutely.
I think that's the only tool we have.
And so if you have been watching our podcast, and if you've been if you've been listening to the podcast and watching Ilibo Village Community, this was a historical account and conversation around the history of South Africa. We've looked into access, we've looked into education, we've looked into aspects of our history, we've looked into some of the solutions that need to be put in place, and certainly bringing out the issue of making sure that we do not fall back into reverse racism. We are pleading, because we are a country that is bleeding, but we understand that healing can take place with just one step, one conversation. Let's open up South Africa. Let's create a South Africa we can all be proud of. #AbaHlali on all social media networks. It's been lovely spending time with you.